Game Time, driven by Briggs Auto Lane and BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Here we go.
Hello and welcome to the game. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. I'll be here with you for the first hour of today's show, then Manhattan High basketball later on tonight. Cole Manbeck's going to be on at 5:10. Get his recap of what happened last night with K-State and Kansas. I'll be honest with you. Pretty big shrug of the shoulders for me for last night. Not sure that we learned a whole lot. I'll tell you why here in the open. A little audio from Bill Self at 4:25 that I guarantee you, especially if you were in attendance last night, you'll be interested in hearing. We go recap a plan that may have backfired a little bit on Tyler at 4:40. And Tyler's going to have you an hour or two to talk more about K-State and Kansas. 537-1350 is always to call the show. You can tweet your questions or comments to the game, KMAN. So let's get right to it. K-State loses to Kansas last night. They made it a close game. It was certainly a very entertaining game, I thought. I mean, it had me entertained pretty much the entire way through. K-State was really good in the first 8 minutes or so, and then Kansas fights back in it. Looked like they were going to run away with it early in the second half. We had a close game, one-point game at the final media timeout. You know, from a watchability standpoint, you couldn't have asked for a whole lot more from what happened in the game last night. But I guess my question would be, one, was the expectation that K-State would win the game? And two, did they really do anything that made you say, man, we learned something about the team last night? I would say the answers to both of those questions are no and no.
Yeah, I would probably agree. I mean, I think that in a season of very unpredictable performances from K-State, last night may have been the most predictable, that they would fight really, really hard to get a win against a rival and a really talented rival. But the problems that have been there for a couple of seasons now, closing out close games, even though they have been, I would say, slightly better in that department this season in closing out close games, you're not going to give them much of the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you look at it this way. If you're in a one-point game against a Bill Self coach team with 4 minutes left, you're not going to love your chances regardless of what building you're in. And once again, K-State seemed to get away from what put them in that position, essentially, in the last few minutes. They were settling for contested jump shots. They weren't trying to get it into the paint enough. They weren't hitting their outside shots as much. And it was a predictable finish.
Or as Bruce Weber called it, you know, down the stretch, they were trying to hit grand slams with nobody on base. Just not making the right play. They seem sped up. But what do we know about this team? They have overcome some of the issues down the stretch in a few occasions, and I will give them credit for that, Baylor being one of them. They made plays when they had to late in the game. But for the most part, this team has really struggled in that department. So we didn't learn anything necessarily by them faltering down the stretch. And there were plenty of instances of that. I actually went and charted what happens after Dean Wade hits the three that ties it. Well, Sfi comes back with the biggest shot of the game, which was a three. Then you have a Kamau missed three. Barry missed a jumper. A Wundu has a missed jumper. And there's a Barry Brown turnover in between an offensive rebound. And that was the one that Frank Mason came from the stands to steal the ball. Then you have a West missed jumper and a DJ turnover with an offensive rebound in between there, too. And all of a sudden, Kansas takes it down the other end, hits free throws. They're up six. Game's out of reach. That's been pretty standard in what we've seen in a lot of the close losses this year, Texas Tech, Maryland, et cetera. I mean, another thing that we've seen before is in stretches, they look like one of the top three teams in the league. And when they jumped out 20-8, they were turning defense into offense, and it looked like a carbon copy of what they were doing to Baylor when they built the 19-point lead. So we know that they're capable of doing that they can produce stretches like that, but we also know that they're inconsistent, and they have some times where the half-court offense – it is not good, and when they're not getting turnovers and not getting out and running and using their athleticism to get easy baskets, then they really get bogged down, and that happened again last night too.
Well, and you were talking about the last few minutes. I believe that three-pointer to tie the game came with like 2:43 left or something like that. The next field goal for K-State after that three-pointer was Wesley Iwundu's meaningless tip-in with 0.4 seconds.
There you go.
That was their next field goal. So you could essentially say that they were held without a field goal the rest of the way because that tip-in came at a time where mathematically it's impossible to force the game into overtime at that point. And I know that we're going to look at things way more from a K-State perspective here, but I think it's worth mentioning that I thought that was a way stronger game defensively for Kansas than we've seen from them in the majority of Big 12 play. This has been a very abnormal season for them in how they have played defense. They're right in the middle of the pack in that category. They've allowed 80 points a lot of times in Big 12 play. I think that part of it was K-State's offense not doing the things that it needed to do last night, but part of it was KU was really, really good at keeping K-State from getting into the paint, getting those passes into the paint with the same consistency that we saw in the first round in Lawrence.
Yeah, they're a good team. They're a better team, and they came in and did play pretty well. I will admit I was especially impressed by the defense considering they gave up 88 points to K-State and Lawrence. I mean, that game in Allen Fieldhouse was a shootout, and K-State was doing about whatever they wanted offensively. That may be the best offensive game that K-State's played this year, so Kansas made sure to lock themselves back in defensively. I mean, I will say the one caveat to that about Kansas playing pretty well and getting an impressive win, which it was from their perspective, Baylor and West Virginia have not been able to shut K-State out from getting a win this year, and that's probably what's going to elevate Kansas to a league title, in part, is that they go sweep K-State this year in two close games. But I do think they left something out there in the fact that Josh Jackson picks up a third foul early in the second half, and then a fourth foul almost immediately when he comes back in. So he, who had been Kansas's really best offensive player and best offensive threat, gets in foul trouble. That, I think, is something you could point to. And then also when you had him really in hot water early in the first half, you couldn't then at least take a lead into the locker room and have some more confidence and a little more cushion and breathing room there at that point in time. You didn't kick them while they were down quite enough. And again, good team. They're going to come back. But there was a stretch where, you know, if you were following me on Twitter, I was pretty irked by pulling Barry Brown, Kamau Stokes out of the game when they had done a really good job orchestrating everything in transition. Corby Irvin's your only guard out there on the floor, and that was really when Kansas made a big run to get back to a tie game. So, yeah. You know, didn't bury him early enough, didn't take quite enough advantage of Josh Jackson being in foul trouble. If you do want to have some frustrations within this game, I would point to that.
If you would have told me that Josh Jackson would score, or if you said at halftime that Josh Jackson would have 1 point in the final 18 minutes of the game, I would have said K-State's got a really good chance of winning this game. But what I wasn't planning on, and maybe I should have been, and maybe K-State fans should have been because they've seen him do so many great things for Kansas in his career, but Frank Mason last night, that guy had in the March Madness terms, he had onions. I mean, those were winning plays that he was making on both ends of the floor. I know we're going to get into it later in the show, what he managed to do when he joined us on press row for a couple of seconds and then made an incredible steal taking it down to the other end. But he made the winning plays that we haven't seen from a lot of K-State players over the last couple of years. They've been putting themselves right there, but they haven't had a player with that bulldog mentality that I'm going to put the team on my shoulders and win this game. And they saw, you know, up close what it can, how important it is when you have a guy like that in Frank Mason.
Yeah, he's a guy that's been around the league for a long time. You know, recruiting-wise, really, when he was coming out, there's not a ton of difference between him and a Barry Brown, Kamau Stokes type of guard, but he's had multiple years, 4 years now, of Bill Self tutelage, and he's the type of guy that's going to make those plays. K-State's backcourt, not that experienced. They're still young, relatively, being sophomores, so Kansas has an advantage there. I mean, look, K-State's a bubble team. I know we've been having this discussion for weeks, and I've been pretty steadfast here. I mean, I think we know what they are. They're going to be an 8-10 seed type of team, and just everything that we've seen has continued to validate that. They didn't quite get over the hump in a game that they had chances, but it was Kansas. It's a better team than them. They did find a way to go jump up and beat Baylor in ugly fashion and sort of in K-State fashion where they can't, you know, do anything consistently throughout a game, but a huge win for them. They're going to jump up and do that. They're also going to have a game or two that's like TCU at home. And I think when it's all said and done, I mean, they're just trending straight towards 9-9 in the league, being a 9 or a 10 seed in the NCAA tournament. Then you start to ask the question, okay, I mean, is that what you want? Is that good enough? There's a lot of ways you can go from there. But I just think this game, another in a long line of evidence of what the team is.
Yeah, and the one thing that disappointed me the most about last night was, I mean, if you would have told me going into the season that Dean Wade, of all people, would score 20 points in both of his games against Kansas, and I don't mean that as a disrespect to Dean Wade, but we've seen from him in the early parts of his career that the marquee games are sometimes the ones that he struggles with the mental side of things, and the nerves can get to him a little bit. If you told me that he was going to score 20 points at KU and then 20 points at home against KU, I would have said, man, K-State's got to find a way to win one of those games. And it was unfortunate to have him 100% on last night, 3 of 3 from long range, and they just were unable to get as many looks to him in the second half, or especially in the last 4 or 5 minutes that they needed to get.
I think Dean Wade and DJ Johnson are becoming increasingly clear to me the two best players on the team. And I guess I say increasingly clear. I mean, early in the year, I may have said that if push really came to shove as well. I mean, I know we are on board in thinking Dean Wade basically has the highest ceiling right now of anybody on the team. And DJ Johnson is probably the most valuable player on the team. But their best offensive possessions were when they were really dedicating to just slamming it inside with one of those two guys, in particular DJ. And then if they would get Dean a touch, an open look, he was knocking down jumpers. He's a very good offensive player. Struggled at times with Josh Jackson. That may be a top five pick in the NBA draft. Like, that's fine. Maybe if he's going to sag off a little bit more, make him shoot jumpers, there were times where I thought that could have helped out a little bit. But for the most part, like, Dean Wade was very, very good last night. Very good. That brings me back around to not having one of those two guys that I think are clearly one of the two best players on the team next year is going to be a huge hit. And where does this team go from next year when this year they're just a bubble team that squeaks in the NCAA tournament? My thoughts remain unchanged on all of that stuff after the last two games against Baylor and Kansas. And it is kind of, I mean, I know the Kansas game was a quick turnaround and it is a disappointing loss because you lose to your rival, but not a lot of buzz considering you did just have one of the biggest road wins in school history just, what, 3 days ago, 4 days ago, whatever right. It was on Saturday. Not a lot of buzz right now for that because of, I think, the way that they finished and people being frustrated with that and then the quick turnaround to KU and a loss.
Well, it's because of the fact that K-State, out of the daunting three-game stretch, three straight games against top 10 or top 15 competition, the one that they chose to win was the one that helps them the most in terms of the NCAA tournament. I know that maybe K-State fans, if you offered them one of the three, they would have taken the KU game just because it's a rivalry game. But the one that's going to do the most for you on Selection Sunday is winning on the road at the number one RPI team. Because if you go win at West Virginia, and that would be great. That would certainly help the resume. But that I believe they're like RPI 34 or something right now. That doesn't go near the distance of winning at Baylor and certainly not the distance of winning at home against an RPI top 10 team.
And I guess my conclusion would be basically, outside of the fact that the game was sandwiched around a terrible loss to TCU and then losing to your rival at home when you started to gain some hope again, it's just the overall idea that I think people have been hoping, waiting, wishing. What's that Jack Johnson song? Like sitting, waiting, wishing. sitting, waiting, wishing for this team to become.
I don't know. Check with Sonny 102.5.
That's right. Hey, good plug there. That was great, actually. But they've been sitting, hoping, waiting, wishing for this team to be more than just a bubble team and be a team that's going to be third or fourth in the league and emphatically in the tournament. You're not going to have to worry about it. I just don't think they are. I just don't think they are. You've been sitting and waiting for that to happen. This is, you know, we're about to hit the second week in February, and they are what they are. They have an identity. They are what they are. And I think that's part of the frustrating thing about even winning that game is people sit there and say, well, then why are you messing around losing at home to TCU? You know, it almost becomes more frustrating in some ways because of that. But you're going to just have to live with what this team is and answer yourself the question, is that good enough right now, and do you feel good enough about if this is going to be a launching point or if this is the conclusion of 3 years of building and you're going to start some of that process over again next year? I think we're still pretty much stuck in the same spot. Cole Manbeck's going to be on the show at 5:10. When we come back, maybe you should make Bramlage quieter next time Kansas is in town. You're listening to The Game.